Blog Talk Radio.
Ulu in Review, our monthly update on Ulu and Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. We'll get into that in just a couple of minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's discussion, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as your suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of ULU. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. It seems like only a few days ago that we were on last month. These Thursdays roll around so quick, but I'm doing well, and hopefully our listening audience, those brothers and sisters out there, are doing well also.
Yes, thank you. It does seem like time is flying. So, Baba Hakima, where would you like to begin this month's ULU in review? What updates do you have on ULU and family-centered economics, or UJAMA, to share with the family tonight?
Great. Well, every Thursday we're going to cover some things that are new, but we're first going to cover a few things that we want to repeat every month for this session.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose for this session primarily is to update and inform existing members, our friends in the community and the general public, on developments at Us Lifting Us. Now, we're getting a little feedback as well. I'm not sure how that's happening. I'm hearing myself.
Okay. I'm not sure. I'm not hearing it. And
okay. All right, then. We'll plow on. And the other thing is that this and all Dare to Win broadcasts are recorded. And so we'll get this recording and update back out to all the members tomorrow, just to keep us informed and aware of the latest changes. So that's the reason for being here. And one of the things we want to repeat every month as well is the underlying, I guess, cultural, maybe even spiritual, reason for Us Lifting Us to be.
Mm-hmm.
Us Lifting Us comes out of a natural desire for us to control the economics of our own community. And, of course, if you're able to do that, and as you're able to do that, then you control additional aspects of your community. But the essential mindset that all of that emerges from, and we want to give it a name, is sovereign intellect. And, of course, we talked about sovereign intellect last month, the third Thursday, and we're going to talk about it again. But we're not going to go into great detail. But I just want to say to the family, it's natural that we want to have conditions changed in America or in London or in Lagos, wherever we are. We want to have the prevailing governments and other entities that are in charge of the day-to-day life of our community. We want for there to be changes and corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And continuous improvement. But ultimately, I think most of us know that the rubber really meets the road at the point at which you can, and we can, as a community, be in control of the elements that make us whole and that protect our vital interests and our wellness. So we want to talk, you know, always about the mindset of being in a sovereign understanding, a sovereign position, a do-for-self position, and we generally refer to it as sovereign intellect. So, again, we just want to mention those two things each week. The fact that this broadcast is to bring us up to date on changes in Oulu and to remind us that ultimately we are responsible for building the world that we seek. No one else is. So that being out of the way, I want to talk about some updates, some things that have changed since we were together 30 days or so ago. One of the changes in our structure is a nonprofit in addition to our already existing nonprofit structure. That paperwork has been filed. It's been approved, and the paperwork is in our hands from the state of Georgia. The federal EIN number has been secured. There is still one additional filing on a federal level that we're preparing to do now. And so those are things that have been completed. Also, there's a requirement for each new business entity to publish a notification, in certain newspapers and periodicals, and we're in the process of doing that as well. Also, as a step or progress, some members and maybe others who've been on these broadcasts know that we have a very special team called Project New Birth, and it has for more than half a year worked on developing our UBC handbook and guide. And UBC is our local Oulu chapters. We're pulling that team back together to also develop an additional handbook and guide, and we may not call it that, but okay. It will be specifically for what we call FIX, or financial and investment caucuses. And later on, we're going to talk a little bit more about FIX. They are essentially the investment club aspect of all of our Oulu chapters. And so okay. We'll be doing our due diligence to develop those guidelines, those tools that make us effective in managing what we'd call an investment club aspect of each local chapter or UBC. So those are things that have been worked on and or completed since our last session. And next month, we will announce other things that have come to pass in terms of items on our checklist. We may remember, at least members will remember, that in March, members in session, mid-March of this year, were presented with a resolution, and the resolution passed, and members voted to approve certain structural changes that the board of directors was to carry out. And so what we're reporting on in terms of updates, for the most part, are the enactment of those approved changes. Of course, we are right at 4 months out from our annual meeting, and we're on course, we're on target, and I'm hopeful, or we're hopeful, that within 6 months, 7 months, 8 months out from our last annual meeting, we will have completed these changes, so that when we come together in March of next year, everything will not only have been completed, but well on the way to development and growth and creating some of the new initiatives that we envision. So those are the updates. Sis, I want to spend the bulk of our time this evening focused on the Ulu-based collectives. That's our, what you would call a chapter of Ulu in local communities. That's our local Ulu group. And these will not only be in the U.S., but as most of our members and listeners know, we have a few members in Canada, a few members in the U.K., in East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, South Korea. I'm not sure why we only had one member there. And I spoke with the brother, and the brother said, I'm not coming back. So he's going to be stuck in South Korea. But we have members in the Caribbean and Central America as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we have any members in South America, but we will. Yes, we do have at least one family that we know of in South America as well. So UBCs, or our member chapters, if we want to call them that, will be located wherever we have a sufficient number of Ulu members that we can bring into community with each other. So I want to talk about the UBCs, but I want to talk about the building blocks for the development of the UBCs as well. We are in the throes of a new campaign to this, to some extent, last month. I call it the Seed to Harvest campaign. It doesn't have an official name, but that's what I call it, Seed to Harvest. So we're going to be planting a lot of seeds. And so the essential element of the campaign is a question. And the question is, do you feel we should control the economics of our community? Again, a simple question. Do you feel we should control the economics of our community? We already know through surveys, through practice, through living, that a good percentage of our people will answer yes to that question. And they'll answer yes to that question because most of us understand that the current configuration of the economy of our communities does not favor us. And we know that there is much room for improvement, for empowerment. So we are already understanding that some changes need to occur. So the yes to that answer or the building blocks for the UBC, and essentially for everything that we are talking about, because there is an awareness within the spirit, within the soul, within the consciousness of most of us that we must control or find ways to gain greater control of the economic life of our community. So what we've done is to develop a campaign around the folk who answer yes to that question. We're going to be asking the question in social media, in face-to-face encounters, through flyers, through videos. So there'll be any number of ways that we'll ask the question and then any number of ways for people to say yes and to give us who they are, give us their information. Many of them, most of them, will be led to an online video that speaks to the answer and lays out a simple, very powerful plan, system, and method for us as African people, wherever we are, to incrementally gain greater and greater control of the economics of our community. I won't go into those now, But I'll simply say that it's simple, it's logical, and it's doable. And it's been done over and over and over again in other communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in our communities in the 1800s and early 1900s very successfully, and we abandoned it. So we know that it works because all humans use the same elements to build economic power and gain economic control of the economies of their communities. So the building block of the UBCs, those are the ULU chapters in local community, the primary building block is yes to that question. The question again is, do you feel we should control the economics of our community? And before I go into a more general discussion about the UBCs, I want to encourage members who are listening and anyone else in the listening audience to be prepared to engage in providing comments and questions, because we're going to be discussing essentially what is a sale or the embryonic structure of black economic empowerment, the seed that will germinate and be the facilitator of creating a new black economy for African people locally, regionally, nationally, and globally. So I want to encourage those that are listening, and then for those brothers and sisters who receive this recording tomorrow, the members,
mm-hmm.
we want you to also be active with questions, suggestions, criticisms, everything that would inform this process and strengthen it as we go. So I just wanted to take time before I got into a general discussion of the UBC to just say to everyone, all of us are responsible for providing knowledge, information, even in the form of criticism, so that what we develop meets our needs, and that I'll just say everything that in ULU we advance, we don't advance it as the truth. We advance it as an appropriate or workable idea or advancement, but understanding that it's always subject to being corrected, being strengthened, being modified, so that it's more effective. So, sis, I just wanted to break there, and then when you let me give me the cue, then we'll go right into a further discussion of the UBC.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of hands raised, Baba, so I'm going to take these two calls, and then we'll proceed. Okay. Our first caller has the last four digits of 1249. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Good. Greetings, greetings. My name is Lamar, and I'm going to deviate from the subject a little bit. I want to talk about a more general subject that you all are still expert on, especially with a Pan-African elder. I want to know the state of Pan. I'm going to start it off by just prefacing it with this. Pan-Africanism is an ideology that many of us have long embraced. However, it's kind of being reassessed now and kind of even being somewhat almost you know, of course, I guess dismissed in many ways in current times, because what's happening, there's a lot of anti-black hate coming from black immigrants in a lot of spaces pertaining to black politics. And the voices that we don't hear are the elder Pan-Africanists that are, you know, that are pushing back against these voices. Many times we find Pan-Africanists enabling that anti-black hate from these immigrant groups and immigrant communities that are coming over to America and participating in racial capitalism and trying to basically erase and replace us and getting involved in our politics and all of that. And so I just like to hear from the elder, given what's going on in the state of black America as it pertains to our politics and us trying to seek our justice claim, and the fact that, you know, a lot of people are reassessing whether or not Pan-Africanism served us because it gave us a different narrative. We stand on our lineage of being proud black Americans, no acknowledging that our ancestry is from Africa, but we're wondering if that Pan-Africanism, even if not intentionally, contributed to, you know, almost contributed to or almost led to erasure, genocide, and ethnocide. Because, you know, like I said, my family hadn't been in Africa in over 500 years. We built something here in America, including this land, this country. And so I just like to get the elders' take on that. So I'll mute my mic and just hear from him.
Okay. Well, thank you for the question.
Great. It's always good hearing from you because, you know, I know your voice. We've broken bread together. We've communed together. And
oh, yeah.
I'm thankful for your work and your due diligence over many, many years. And it's always good to hear from you. Yes, I mean, we are damaged from many directions. And I consider myself a Pan-Africanist. And I think most of us do, even if we don't acknowledge it in that term. We recognize that we are from the dominant people of Africa, wherever we may lodge ourselves at this moment. And in Ulu, we envision an economic approach that allows us to contribute to the welfare of each other wherever we are on the planet. And when you talked about ethnic capitalism or capitalism and its practices from whoever, including Africans, it does damage to, I shouldn't say it does damage necessarily, because a lot of times when we identify brothers and sisters as capitalists, many times we're not capitalists. We're just simply entrepreneurs at a lower level, subsistence level. I saw a report that there were 60,000 black-owned businesses in the Atlanta metropolitan area. Most of them are just simply brothers and sisters who file for a business license and who don't have any employees. So at the level that we practice economics, it's hard to call us a capitalist, or at least a predatory capitalist. But I would just say there are many elements to your question, and I appreciate it. But in general, I would say that there is a distinct advantage for being a part of a people who outnumber every other people on the planet. The fastest growing people on the planet, in terms of land mass, probably the richest mineral deposits and other resources. And then from a cultural standpoint, one of the most dynamic people on the planet. So I don't want to run away from that resource. And yes, there are those of us in the West who've been here for a long time who maybe were here before the Atlantic slave trade, but I still think that it's to our advantage to lock arms, lock resources, and lock our hopes for the future with our brothers and sisters wherever we may be on the planet. So that would be my response, but give me a call, brother. Let's talk, because we haven't talked person to person lately. And, you know, I just appreciate the work that you've done, the work that you are doing, and the work that you are going to do, because we know that it's in your spirit to do that. So thank you for the question.
All right. Thank you. I'll holler at
you. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. We have another caller. Caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Yeah, greetings, Sister Q, Baba Hakima. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to hear you when you're in the beach, on the beach, and in the water.
Yeah, yeah, I left the beach yesterday.
Okay.
At least I left looking at the beach.
All right.
But I had a question and a comment to the brother. I'm glad, and I thank him for that inquiry. And usually, when I look around, it's not only the Euro-Americans who may be oppressing and subjugating us in the United States, but it's them in collaboration with their partners globally.
Yeah.
And so what they might practice on us, or they may practice on the continent or the Caribbean, you know, but it's their hookup globally. And obviously, if we're talking about succeeding in what we want to do, it has to be from a global perspective, cooperation and integration and that stuff. So I like the response, and I'm thankful for you, Baba, for responding. My question, though, is dealing with what you call the UBCs. I want to get a little just a question. As you said earlier, that the you know, a lot of people call black capitalism, you know, technically that probably doesn't exist. We got entrepreneurs and people trying to sustain themselves, a couple billionaires, millionaires, what have you. But in comparison to the rest of us, it's almost non-existent. So what role do you see, if any, these entrepreneurs who've been able to fight through the system, struggle through it, set up some type of a business, been able to sustain it in spite of, or I should say from their own planning to be successful and cooperating with other entrepreneurs of like minds, what role do you see ULU playing, or what role do you see the UBCs playing as they evolve? And I will listen to your response, and thanks a lot for the program.
Well, thank you for the question. And that's a vital question. The UBC, or the local collective of ULU members, some of which are owners of businesses, employees in black businesses, and some who are not business owners now will become independent business owners while they are involved in the group ownership model of ULU. What we must envision is black-owned businesses that currently exist and new black-owned businesses involving themselves in a rich environment with co-ops and group-owned business enterprises that ULU champions that are not technically co-ops, because they are owned not just by their members or their workers, but they're owned by a larger collective. And there needs to be a synergy between these three types of businesses: traditional business ownership, maybe sole proprietorship, partnerships, small corporations, with co-ops that are, or technically co-ops, that are food co-ops, worker-owner co-ops, farmer co-ops, whatever they are, and then ULU group-owned enterprises that are run like cooperatives, but they're owned by a larger collective. So we call them group-owned enterprises. And the UBC in every community will be responsible for developing a directory and a map of these different elements and ULU enterprises as they grow. I won't go into detail now, but there is a business proposal in the hopper with ULU that will create an online presence that will marry all of the entities that will be identified and mapped by the local UBCs. That business, emerging business that will be the connecting point, is called the Trade Basket, and it will be an international hub of all of these entities that identify empowerment with economic self-determination, with sovereignty, whatever they call, whatever term we may use, because they are brothers and sisters who are socially conscious that own businesses that sometimes we group into, quote-unquote, personally owned enterprises and say that they're capitalists. And I agree with you very often, they're just working for themselves as opposed to working for somebody else and using a business model and a business license to facilitate that. But in ULU, as you know, Brother Shabaka, members of the UBC or of ULU are not only individuals. There are other co-ops that belong to ULU. A church can belong to ULU. A sorority can belong to ULU. Any entity, individual or institutional, has an opportunity to become a member of ULU. So the goal, and being succinct with and doing justice to your question, the goal is to integrate the already existing and the future privately owned business enterprises into a strategy, into a scheme where we deliberately keep greater and greater percentage of the surplus or the energy involved in our business endeavors in our community, so that we grow the base of business activity, commercial activity that is rooted in the community, owned by individuals and institutions that actually live in the community, and create greater jobs, associate all of this activity with as many organizations and institutions as we can, so that it's not only a business thrust, it's a social thrust led by our business activity. And so we want to, in a very real way, attach ourselves to already existing businesses and give them an opportunity to contribute to the pooling of resources, to the aggregation of resources, both as members of ULU and also subscribers to some of the tools that we use to promote them as well. So right now, that's the landscape. The landscape is dominated when we're talking about black ownership, is dominated by individually owned or small enterprises. And what we want to do is increase the number and the scale of co-ops and group-owned enterprises so that eventually the number of co-ops and group-owned enterprises dominate the economic landscape. And it's only then when the businesses belong to the community. Because for the most part now, even if it's black-owned, in rare situations, the banks are outside of our communities, the insurance companies are outside of our communities, and other support elements are outside of our community. Very often the supplies that they actually provide are manufactured outside of our community. We want to close those gaps, and more of what is consumed is also produced by us. So I hope that answers your question, and I want to expand on it a little more in talking about the UBC, but I want to stop here in case I didn't answer Shabaka's question sufficient.
Okay. Brother Shabaka, were you satisfied with that answer? Okay, he's not answering.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that response.
All right.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Yeah. And I want to encourage other brothers and sisters to come up with questions. And for the brothers and sisters who listen to this recording later on. And by the way, every broadcast that we make on Dare to Win is archived, and you can go back and listen to it anytime you want. You can play it over and over again. You can make notes from it and develop position, whatever you choose. But know that all of these broadcasts are archived. Now, the one that we're doing this evening, we're going to go a step further. We're going to capture it like a, what do you call them? Well, anyway, we're going to send it back out to every members in tomorrow.
Okay.
And again, encourage them to ask additional questions through our phone number at Ulu or through our email address. And be prepared next third Sunday to be engaged and be informed and participate. If there are no other hands, I'd like to continue our discussion about the UBC.
Yes, please do. There are no more questions.
Good. How much time we got? Another 15 minutes? No?
Yeah. It says
okay.
15 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, we don't often say it, but I won't let the cat out of the bag. If we needed to, we could broadcast for 2 hours.
For sure.
Now, if you go on the Blog Talk and you sign up now, you only can sign up for an hour. We were grandfathered. We've been a part of Blog Talk long enough that they can't, you know, squeeze us out. So if we needed to go over an hour, we could do that. But I won't go beyond that. The UBC, the Ulu Base Collective. In other words, this is a chapter of Ulu. It's at the base in the communities and in the neighborhoods where we live, where Ulu members live. In some cases, there may be only one or two or three or four Ulu members in a local area. We're going to give them the tools and allow them to join the campaign to build the numbers of members. We're fortunate here in the Atlanta metropolitan area to have more than 150 Ulu members. Not all of them are individuals, but some of them are institutions, other businesses. But these UBCs ought to be configured in two ways, or given the capacity to succeed in two ways. The first way is in creating new ULU members and then involving themselves in the routines, the programs, the initiatives that keep them together as a family, as extended family, the UBC. Mm-hmm. The other thing is these UBCs will have the capacity to analyze the economic landscape of their community and make some determinations of what would be an enhancement or something that could be added that would give the community a greater economic capacity or that would serve the needs of the community from a business perspective. And as the UBCs come upon and develop some idea of what could be added to the business mix,
mm-hmm.
there is already in place, and we'll edit it as we go, steps that they can take to identify the concept that they're looking at, to identify basic elements of what might be a business plan, and other tools. And then there are aspects of ULU that would help them to develop this idea so that it's a tangible business idea, business proposal
mm-hmm.
that ULU and its global membership could join with and bring into creative existence. Now, the new business or enterprise would be owned by all of ULU, but would be managed locally. The staff would be managed locally. The impact would be local.
Mm-hmm.
And as the business progresses and gets good at what it does, provide the goods and services that it provides, and it produces a surplus, the surplus, based on a formula, is divided between a number of factors. The vast majority of the resources are plowed back into ULU for development and to strengthen our process and maybe help to fund an idea that's been developed in another community.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the aggregated, some of the surplus stays in the local community. There's a bonus for the workers in the enterprise that produced the surplus. There is also a percentage of it that goes to charity in the local community. And then a portion of it, of course, goes to administration. But two factors. These UBCs will be empowered to do some fundamental things to support the individuals and the individual families that make up the UBC. Some of that might be discussions, programs, and initiatives around security.
Mm-hmm.
That may be food security, water security, physical security. There may be other things such as bulk buying, things that would aid the collective and the families of the collective in managing, you know, what it means to be viable in
mm-hmm.
our communities. There may be programs and initiatives centered around healing. You know, there are experts in the psychological field who say we must heal, fight, and build at the same time. I guess you'd say fight first,
mm-hmm.
just to keep from being overrun, and heal to the extent that you can, and build at the same time. But I always say that that building is fundamental. I mean, obviously, you want to fight and you want to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But if we build strongly enough, we'll cross the finish line even in our wounded state. You know, I'm not one of those that think we got to be healed in
mm-hmm.
order to be free. We're going to be free even in our wounded state. But anyway, that's another discussion. The other things that the local collective would be involved in, and we spoke a little bit about it earlier, I want to reiterate, there will be tools that the local collectives, the UBC, will have to begin to generate a directory and a mapping process for the businesses and other institutions that are a part of the existing community now, that in the spirit of Shabaka's question, that we can begin to build relationships with, so that the building that ULU does is in tandem, in cooperation with other institutions, other entities in the community. So the business directory and the mapping that the UBCs will do will be formalized and
mm-hmm.
included in several places, so that it becomes a useful tool. Most of us know about Angie or Angie's List. It started out as Angie's List.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an online resource to find almost everything that you need in the way of services for
mm-hmm.
your home, for your business, personal care, whatever. We will develop businesses in those areas as well. But all of it, or much of it, will start from us doing this type of mapping. The other thing that I want to mention is something that is going to be built in culturally to the UBCs. The UBCs, or the ULU chapters, will of necessity be relatively small, 15, 20 members,
mm-hmm.
at least 15 or 20 active members. We don't want them to be large groupings such that people don't sense their position to make a contribution. However, built into our structure is something that we call social mitosis. In other words, a way for UBCs to naturally divide and become two, to become four, to become eight, to become 16.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so as the UBCs are formed, as individuals are orientated and trained in the ways and practices and programs of the UBC, at a point, certain individuals will be trained to depart and form new UBCs as a natural part of the process. The new UBC will identify with a different territory, maybe
mm-hmm.
a code, maybe a school board zone, or however it delineates. It will have its own unique name, but it will be essentially a carbon copy of the initial UBC. So ULU will be bringing new UBCs into existence in two ways. We will be promoting for new members and
mm-hmm.
for members to step forward and provide leadership for the creation of new UBCs. But some UBCs will come from the process of social mitosis and already existing UBCs dividing I'm reminded very often, and many of you on the call will know this is the case. You know, we got a proliferation of black churches, but a lot of times it's because an individual or a few individuals in the church separate and start a new one. But a lot of businesses and entities, you know, use social mitosis. We will use that, but in a very predictable way, so that we maintain the essential essence of each UBC. As a matter of fact, the UBCs will be chartered, and if we find that a new UBC deviates from the patterns that we set up, then we'll be able to revoke the charter and take the charter away, so that we're not represented by a Ulu chapter that's not representing the Ulu culture. And when we talk about Ulu culture, we essentially are talking about family-centered economics, utilizing the value systems of Ma'at and the Nguzo Saba. But essentially, we are building a group-owned economy. The economies that we are nurtured in are dominated by individually owned corporations. And even if they are stockholder entities, generally there's a few individuals or family that own more than 50%, so they are dictators anyway. And so we want to create, in the coming years, locally, regionally, nationally, and globally, a proliferation of these enterprises that are group-owned, either pure cooperatives or Ulu-owned enterprises that are owned by individuals and institutions in the community, and owned from wherever we exist in the world, in that Ulu is a global entity. I probably have run into the end of the hour. Before we close, are there any questions or feedback from the family?
There are no hands up at this time, Baba.
Good.
We have
about two minutes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, look, Sister Q, of course, we're thankful for you for being here every Thursday to navigate the ship. And I just say to brothers and sisters, I'm excited. The changes that we are making in Ulu gives us the ability to grow into the hundreds of thousands, eventually into the millions of Ulu members scattered throughout the world. Remember, the UNIA, under leadership of Marcus Garvey, grew to more than 6 million members scattered throughout the world. We have got to not only think in those numbers, but we've got to build in those numbers. We're up against some very credible forces in the world that would have them serve us forever. And that's not our desire, not our design. And so what it demands from each of us is patience and love for each other. And when we talk about sovereign intellect, once we accept the imperative, and it is an imperative, there can be no other way to describe it, we are the only people responsible for the welfare of our collective. Nobody else is. And the quicker we come to that understanding and that position, then it will become natural, almost second nature, that we build these supportive institutions, because that's what a sovereign intellect does. It
Sure.
builds systems and institutions that, for the people, protect their interests, promote their interests, defend their interests, and that's the natural thing that we would have done on our behalf. So, Sister Q, I thank you for the opportunity. We'll be back here the third Thursday of next month.
Yes. Thank you, Baba, for the update and for reiterating that we do what we do because that's what we're supposed to do. We're not against anybody. We're just for us doing what we
there
do.
There you go. There you
All
go.
All right. So we want
thank
to thank everyone. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for the report. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. And we want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.